It's time for Fed Talk, the live show for feds in the know. From federal agencies to Capitol Hill, the attorneys of Shaw, Bransford, and Roth bring in experts from across the federal community to bring you inside the issues. Fed Talk is meant to provide general information about legal issues. However, the views expressed in this program are not intended to provide legal counseling. Listeners are cautioned not to rely upon any statements made in resolving legal issues they may face, but instead to consult with their own attorney about specific situations. Attorneys are not engaged in providing legal services while appearing on the program and are not responsible in any manner for the consequences that may stem directly or indirectly from reliance on any statement made during this program.
Good morning and welcome to Fed Talk. I'm Deborah Roth. I'm hosting your show this morning. And we're really in front of the curve here at Fed Talk because we're talking today with guests who really are leading the issue, the number one issue being discussed in the HR human capital world, and that's the issue of employee engagement and leadership development. And who better to join us in the studio to talk about the issues of employee engagement, what is it, how do you measure it, and what's happening in the federal workforce, than Fred Steckler, the Chief Administrative Officer for the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office. In his portfolio, he has human capital. And for those of you who don't know, but you should know, PTO won the number one best place to work in the best places to work survey for agency subcomponent. And so, Fred, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Deborah. It's great to be here.
It is great to have you. And you can't really move off of PTO without saying how remarkable their move to the number one slot was. And in 2007, Fred, PTO was in 172nd slot.
Right.
Out of 220 places that were measured in the federal government. And in 6 years, you made it to number one. Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you very much. It's a great place, and it's great to be here today.
Yeah, and we're really looking forward to hear what was the magic formula that PTO used to move itself 27 points. And also, you know, we're really very fortunate to have with us the folks from Deloitte. Deloitte was the sponsor of the Partnership for Public Services Best Places to Work survey, and Deloitte worked very closely, probably helped crunch the data. And with us, we have David Dye from Deloitte, who's the director of the human capital practice at Deloitte and was the number one executive working on the best places to work with the partnership. Good morning, David.
Good morning, Deborah. Great to have time to talk to your audience today on this topic, and look forward to it.
Yeah, no, I feel really special. I've been places in the last month in the human capital world, hearing people talk about it, and it really is an important topic that when you really drill down, which we're going to do today with the two of you, we're going to find out why it really matters. And then also from Deloitte, we have Dr. Catherine Ryan. Good morning, Catherine.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
And she is an industrial organizational psychologist, also with Deloitte in their human capital consulting practice. Catherine's really focused these days on the issue of developing new government leaders from the Gen X, Gen Y?
Gen Y, yep.
Gen Y. I don't even know the difference between Gen X and Gen Y, but you're going to explain that to us, right?
I will. Yeah.
Okay, because I think I'm a baby boomer. And actually, that was one of the things that when I was reading this, I realized that how baby boomers went to work and what they wanted to get out of work is really different than what the next generations are looking for. And David, let's start with you. Can you tell us a little bit, just to introduce yourself to our listeners, how'd you get into the area of human capital? Like, what is it that drives your interest?
Yeah, well, I resemble the baby boomer comment, so I'll join you on
so
that,
do I.
Deborah. You know, I got interested in people probably at an early age. I just really like to understand, why do people do what they do? Why do they think what they think? Somewhere along the line, I began to translate that into, why does that work in organizations? So as a trained psychologist, understanding behavior and how does that help organizations be more successful? So I guess I'm a psychologist at heart who likes to understand what makes people tick. Mm-hmm. And I particularly like to understand that also in the leadership realm. I'm getting trained up as an executive coach now. And what a way to kind of bring that back to roost, and how do we help our government leaders be more effective? So,
And Fred, you have not had your entire career with the U.S. government. You have a piece of it here at PTO. During the time period that PTO climbs itself from 172nd to number one, tell us how you, because you were, you know, you, everybody at PTO was an important part of moving, but you have human capital. You're the top human capitalist at PTO. What drives your interest in that?
Well, actually, there are a lot of human capitalists at PTO, and I think that's one of our secrets. I've been there about 2.5 years, and I think one of the major reasons that we moved so quickly over the last several years was top senior management leadership, and then, of course, involving everybody, every single person in the agency in that. But my interest comes at human capital from basically I started out in the Navy. And then I spent quite a bit of time consulting and working for various organizations and the federal government. And my interest has always been how is it that some teams and people are more engaged or inspired than others? And how do you turn whatever team you're leading into one of those teams? And it was just a matter of looking around and being intrigued by how some teams are so much better and some people are so much more engaged. And there are environments where that's just the complete opposite. Mm-hmm. So it was just curiosity, mm-hmm. really, and wanting personally to be able to make the teams and organizations that I worked with top performing.
Mm-hmm. It sounds very much like David's. You had a personal intrigue in that. Whereas I do think if you looked at workforces and how people worked 20 years ago, you know, you and I, we've talked about that before we got on the show. I was in the workforce 20 years ago. I don't think people cared much about how I felt about my job. And this trend's very interesting, and I want to talk about it in a moment. But Catherine, you're the youngest at the table. And so... And so it's very interesting because I can see why we would be interested having watched the concept of human capital evolve over 20 years. But what gets you so interested in human capital development?
Well, I think really my passion for understanding and helping people improve their experiences at work. I mean, we spend a lot of our lives at work.
We do.
And I don't think anybody thinks, man, you know, the rest of my life is so great, but I don't care at all about how I feel at work.
It's just a job.
Yeah. So, and particularly for the younger generation, I think it's really important to feel as though making an impact, there's meaning in your work. And, you know, with all of this language around work-life balance and things like that, I mean, you know, those are really integrated concepts now. Mm-hmm. And how do you improve the way that people behave at work, feel at work, and are engaged at work?
Mm-hmm. And you're focusing on the next generation and the development of leaders, and leadership is really an important element or factor in the measuring, not only in the measuring of engagement, but getting employees engaged, which we're going to talk about later on in the show. But having sat through a recent Chico Council subgroup at OPM, I was telling the three of you before we went on the show, about two-thirds of the way into this two-hour meeting, one of the industrial psychologists at OPM says, this is all great, but can we all agree on a definition of engagement? And you could hear this communal, or as Fred said, like the eyeballs rolling back to the back of everybody's head, like, oh, no. And I'm new to it, and I did not appreciate what the air out of the room was all about. But having the two of you who've spent years, you know, thinking about human capital, why did the air go out of the room? And what is the concept? We all use the buzzword engagement. What does it mean, employee engagement?
Yeah, just to start this off, and Fred, you live and breathe it in your agency very well. But if you go back and look at the literature, if you will, which is maybe the non-sexy part, there's probably 20, 25 years of history of calling it something different, you know, satisfaction, commitment, happiness at work. And here we are with engagement kind of being the buzzword for the day. So I think when you talk about how do you measure this, it becomes, more about the science and less about the art. And I think there's a lot of art to what we do in organizations. And so when Fred talks about how it works at PTO, there's probably a lot of things that they do that only would work at PTO, which to me is part of the art part. But when you peel back and just sort of talk about it in terms of taglines. We've talked about, you know, people going above and beyond, people thinking about new ways to do their jobs. I'm back to my roots of what makes people tick. I'm going to suggest there's maybe three components of this. That one is People generally, I believe, want to achieve things. They want to help their organization. They want to be better people. So there's something around a need for achievement. Secondly is that we are social beings. And so we want to be able to interact with and have a social experience with teams and comrades in a way that is pleasant, and that we together do things more than we could by ourselves. And I think the third aspect is, am I being treated fairly in the organization? You know, am I being treated equitably? And that's where a lot of the leadership thing comes in. So achievement, camaraderie, and equity, I think, is one of the latest ways that we're kind of thinking about this.
Okay, Fred.
Yeah, I would just...
I'm writing that down. I am. I'm taking that down because I'm in that work group and everybody's like searching for a definition. Maybe I'm going to take yours, David.
Okay. I wrote it down too. I think the way we think about it at the PTO really is a little bit broader and not quite as detailed, but it's built on what Dave just said. We look at capturing the heart and the head. I mean, to me, that's really engagement. And it's... Okay, and that's a lot of work goes into that. The heart is where you're able to deliver. You have passion about what you do, about your organization, and then the head is really do your talents match what you do? Are you excited about the mission of the organization? So, and if you can capture both the head and the heart, then you really are able to be in a situation where team members deliver that discretionary effort, we call it. It's the effort beyond what's required. Mm-hmm. And they do it willingly. And at the PTO, we do that. We exceed our performance expectations. And that's probably another piece, is that all of this engagement work that we're doing right now really is geared towards not just making a wonderful employment experience.
Right. They're so happy. But for the employer, it's
results. And it should translate into bottom line results.
Mm-hmm. You know, and I heard Fred obviously knows this. I've been saying it all week. I was at a conference. I guess it was last week. Was it?
Yes.
It was last week. The Federal Manager Association conference, and they had a panel of human capitalists throughout the government who had really excelled on the 2013 survey. And Fred, you were on the panel, and I remember you talking about discretionary effort, and the light bulb went off in my head. Like, that is the old, that's where the rubber meets, I think you even said that, you coined it, I think you said that's where the rubber meets the road.
Yeah.
For employee engagement. And there's a lot to talk about on how you measure engagement, what is the best places to work survey looking at, and of course the PTO case study. But we do need to take our first commercial break. You're listening to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Today, my journey to help save people money on car insurance brought me to our nation's capital. I was taking a stroll around a mall when I met a very nice gentleman from Ohio who asked me a question. What kind of word is Geico anyway? An excellent question, I replied. I told him that GEICO isn't a word, it's an acronym, and it stands for Government Employees Insurance Company. I explained how GEICO actually got its start 75 years ago to help federal employees save money on car insurance. Interesting, the man replied, but today GEICO saves lots of people money on car insurance, including me. Have you ever thought about changing the name? I said, it's a thought, but Gecko sounds like GEICO. If we change the name, I might be out of a job. We strolled a bit more, stopped for some tea, and we both agreed. It's probably best to keep the name just like it is, GEICO.
To get a free rate quote, go to geico.com, then buy online or over the phone. If you're a federal employee or belong to an association like Big, Few, Young Government Leaders, and others, you may qualify for a special discount. Contact GEICO today to request your special federal savings.
Welcome back to Fed Talk. I'm Deborah Roth. We're hosting a show today on the issue of employee engagement and leadership development in the federal workforce. And to talk about that topic, we have with us today Fred Steckler. He's the Chief Administrative Officer for the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office. He has human capital strategy and human resources in his portfolio. And, of course, if you don't know it, I'm here to tell you the PTO made Best Places to Work first number one ranking in agency subcomponents with a really, really impressive climb close to the bottom 6 years ago. We have David Dye. He is the director of the Federal Human Capital Practice at Deloitte. And he brings with him also Dr. Catherine Ryan. She's an industrial psychologist, also doing human capital with Deloitte, focusing on developing the leaders of the next generation. So In the earlier segment, we talked about what got each of you interested in human capital and the concept of employee engagement. What is it? How do you define it? And, you know, you really can't talk about the 2013 survey that was done, the Federal Employee Viewpoint Survey. If you're in the know, you call it the EVS, the Federal EVS, if you're in the know. I'm in the know. So you can't really talk about the 2013 survey without talking about what was identified, David, as the barriers or the challenges facing human capital in the federal government for 2013?
Sure. Well, when you go back, so the data were collected, about a year ago by the Office of Personnel Management.
It was April, right?
March, April, May timeframe. There's about a four-week window where the data are collected, and then it gets fed to the Partnership for Public Service toward the end of the year, and then the rankings are produced. If you think back to 2013, a lot of things happening to federal employees, right? A lot of things happening.
A lot of bad, negative things.
Yeah, things that probably are not under most people's control when you think about it, but we talk about it. And I know when we release the results, it's focusing on those things like, this is how many years of pay freezes? You might have to contribute more to your retirement. Furloughs, sequestration came into our vocabulary. Now, interestingly enough, when these data were collected, it was actually before the word furlough and sequestration started to hit. So even though these numbers were declining, if you were to take the pulse, say, in the summer or even fall time frame, you know, the numbers might even been less. Mm-hmm. So that's sort of the external side of the world.
Mm-hmm.
From an internal perspective, and I can talk a little bit about some of the results that came out from last year. So the rankings have been out there for 10 years. And the 2013 numbers, all this, rolls up to a single index, if you will, that you can basically say this is the percentage of the workforce that feels satisfied and committed to, what's going on at their job and in their organization. And that 2013 index score showed up at 57.8, which is a decline of 3 points mm-hmm. from last year. And we're now basically down to the lowest point in the history of the rankings.
Mm-hmm.
So, you may say all these external factors were having a contribution to that. But I do think that we ought to make sure that we focus internally on what's going on in the agencies, that maybe we do have more control over these things. And that's really where I think we should focus our attention.
Mm-hmm. What's interesting when you read the survey is it measures it against the happiness factor in the private sector, which has for a five-year period now been holding around 70. And at its peak, David, the federal workforce in 2010 had an overall happiness factor, satisfaction factor with their job at 65%. And now they're down. And also, I agree with you, David, that's part of, I don't want to say the criticism, but the discussion on the survey, it is a snapshot in time. It was April. It wasn't necessarily August when they actually were furloughed, right?
Right, that's right.
One of the things that's always been interesting to me is how is it in the private sector, particularly during the recession, how is it that they really held on to a 70% happiness factor and the Fed's declined?
Well, that's a great question. And, of course, the federal government, probably different than the corporate world in terms of being able to amass a set of data like this. So you become in the spotlight and all the agencies are kind of ranked. I don't know that the private sector ranks quite the same way the federal government does. So there is that. But as you said, last year, the private sector went up almost by a point.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and they probably came out of the field of the recession before the federal government did. So there is that. But I think somehow you have to remove the noise or the things you can't control. And I know we're going to talk a little bit more mm-hmm. about the impact of leadership and what role they play in kind of removing the distraction, focusing in on what's important. How does my job contribute to the mission of this mm-hmm. organization? And somehow removing the distraction and make sure that we keep ourselves internally focused.
Fred, I'd like you to comment, if you will, on what PTO viewed their barriers to be. Because the obvious, and of course I went there, the easy and the obvious when you look at the numbers, the declining numbers, the barriers were the external noise and punches that the federal workforce took. And maybe that's it, maybe it wasn't it. You know what I mean? But for PTO, do you mind giving us a broader view in the past 6 years of what it thought its barriers were?
Sure. I think if we look back 5 to 6 years at PTO, we had a new leader come in, and his name was Dave Capos, and he was the head of the agency. and he had a great leadership team that worked with him. And he really he came from the customer base of the agency. Dave came from IBM as a customer of the agency for most of his career. So he came to PTO and with a mandate to change, and the change was based on serving our customers, our stakeholders. And he had credibility. He had credibility both external to the agency and within the agency. Dave was loved by everybody in the agency. And he turned everything on its head. And there were a few things, I think, that he really focused on that really helped make that change. First and foremost, or at least one of the most important, was labor management relations.
Mm-hmm. Which PTO sort of was infamous for having a really staunch divisiveness between their unions and the management. I mean, it just was historical.
It was historical. And if anybody wants to get some good reading, go to the FLRA website and look up PTO, and you'll get some great comments from the FLRA, frankly chastising both the PTO and its unions to behave like adults. It was, and the environment couldn't be more different today. And leadership really started that. I think before Dave was even sworn in, or maybe just after it, he met with the union presidents without anybody else around. No lawyers, no labor relations people, just Dave and the unions to really talk about how they could achieve greater things for the PTO. Mm-hmm. And as a result, today we have a really good labor management relations climate. We hardly ever do formal bargaining on anything anymore with any of our unions. We, of course, have disagreements, and we have different points of view, but we come together. We come together before programs are instituted. We do a lot of pre-decisional involvement. Mm-hmm. Matter of fact, that's the law of the land, really, at right. PTO anymore. And as a result, I think we produce better programs and a better environment. I mentioned a few weeks ago that if you have a bad labor management relations environment, it's like a cloud is hanging over an organization. And if you can remove that cloud and work together, it's amazing what can happen.
Mm-hmm. That was. Do you think that was the number one obstacle facing your workforce?
I think it was. There were probably a number of obstacles, but that was certainly one of the key obstacles. I think one of the other things that we did was really become very transparent in our reporting our metrics to our stakeholders and also to our employees. Mm-hmm. If you go to the PTO website, you'll see a great dashboard out there, which really every minute of every day is telling everyone how we're doing against what's important to our mission in terms of granting patents and trademarks. So,
does that tie back to capturing people's hearts and passion? Like, you want to be part of an organization that if you're publicizing. Your results, and you have, you know, decent people, smart. I mean, you have a highly educated workforce. Do you think that helps incentivize people to turn on their heart, that they want to care about looking good publicly? I mean, it's sort of human nature, isn't it?
Absolutely. And I think the connection to mission accomplishment is vital. And that's one of the things I was going to say to in the face of overall federal decline in scores, there were agencies that did improve. And so the scores are based on an instrument which has a lot of questions. And so there is some noise in the external world that's affecting us. And certainly the Fed bashing that goes on and all of that makes it very hard to be a federal employee. Within that, and I think you mentioned it earlier, mm-hmm. if you're focused on what you're doing and your connection to the mission, and mm-hmm. you can see that actually the work that you're doing is providing results, that's a critical component, I think, of engagement.
It's almost like you're getting your employees to tune out the noise from the outside.
Exactly. It's there. But I think if you focus on the team that you have, in our case, the PTO, the great team that we have, all of our colleagues working together, I think you can accomplish a lot and still be engaged. Mm-hmm. And the noise out there is kind of an annoyance, to be honest with mm-hmm. you.
You know, one of the things that I've been most impressed in Fred's organizational environment is you've been a leader in the telework movement. Mm-hmm. And when you think about your workforce, how do you keep those iconic parts of your business sort of intact when people are maybe not all hanging out in the same building?
And how do you keep them engaged and really loving their coworkers and their supervisors when they're working, from home? Most of your workforce is at home.
We do, at any given point, half the PTO workforce is probably working from home. We have one of the leading telework programs, I think, not only in the government, but in the private sector as well. And it's a big component of our engagement. It affects work-life balance. You know, we really don't care when you work. If you like to work from midnight to 6 in the morning, that's fine, as long as you get the work done. I think
isn't that an interesting concept?
It's
the antithesis of how a big bureaucratic thing, the monolith, the federal government, to allow that kind of individual flexibility. It's really radical, Fred.
And it's something that really engages the younger members of the workforce, too. I mean, work isn't a thing you or a place you go. It's a thing you do. And that's definitely, I think, how the younger members of the workforce feel. And some of those engagement tactics that Fred was just mentioning, the transparency and the real connection to purpose and mission and things like that. I mean, those are all sort of textbook engagement of the mm-hmm. younger workforce.
But it's so radical and freeing that a governmental agency would have that mentality, Fred. And let it loose and try it out and see what happens.
It's and the question you always come back to when people have difficulty understanding or supporting telework. One of the common myths is you can't manage somebody. You know, from the manager perspective, you can't manage them if you can't see them. Well, and our first question is, well, how can you manage them if you see them? How do you know? You know, that they're actually, what's the difference? And the same thing about engagement and trying to include people. We do a lot of creative things to try and keep people who are working 1,000 miles from our main campus to stay engaged. We have technology is important, things like WebExes and those kinds of things are very important. But actually, it comes down to the fundamental caring about each other. And that's also radical thought for a lot of traditional management.
Like I said, I was in the workforce 20 years ago. No one cared how you felt right. about your job. It was just, did you get it done and how well and how quickly? I do want to follow up with Fred about what can we learn from PTO's climb to the top. But we need to take our mid-show break. You're listening to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
GEICO's famous for saving people money on car insurance. And now, if you're a federal employee, you could be saving even more. In fact, you may already qualify for a special federal discount from GEICO. If you're a federal employee, or if you belong to an association like BIG, FEW, FLIOA, Young Government Leaders, and many others, you could be saving hundreds of dollars. Contact GEICO today to get a quote and be sure to request your special federal savings. GEICO got its start back in 1936, specifically to serve federal employees. Today, we're still making it easy for federal employees to save money on car insurance. If you're a federal employee, you may qualify for a special federal employee discount. Or if you belong to an association like BIG, FEW, Young Government Leaders, and many others, you may also qualify. See how much you could be saving. Contact GEICO today to get a quote. And be sure to request your special federal savings.
If you're a federal law enforcement officer, then you know to do your job, you tap inside sources. To have a voice on policy and legislation, you join FLIOA. And when you want federal law enforcement officer news and up-to-date federal court decisions, you read FedAgent.com. If you aren't reading FedAgent.com, subscribe today. It's free. Don't let this source pass you by. I'm John Adler, President of the Federal Law Enforcement Officers Association, and I approve this message.
Welcome back to Fed Talk. I'm Deborah Roth, and today we've been talking with folks out in the human capital world, sort of dissecting the 2013 Best Places to Work survey results. And the topic really is one of employee engagement and leadership. And with us is Fred Steckler from the PTO, whose agency moved to the first place within 6 years of being at 172nd place and in Best Places to Work survey. And Fred, before our break, we were talking about some of the barriers that your agency itself faced. And one of them was labor management relations. But also, we got into the issue of telework, and I assume it was, I don't want to say it was a barrier, an obstacle, But there's been resistance in the federal workplace to moving employees from home, from work to home. And PTO is really a shining star when you talk about the numbers. And I know the numbers, who you really are, because I heard you at a conference last week. But why don't you give our listeners a snapshot of the agency? Because I think when you talk about telework and what you're achieving in telework, and you hear, like, what, you know, what's the, you know, your data points of who you really are in the agency, it's really quite impressive that it's very forward thinking, which is what the next generation is looking for. Give us a snapshot view of who PTO is.
Sure, Deborah. Well, we have a great campus down in Alexandria, Virginia.
It's lovely, actually.
For those of you that have been there, yeah, thank you. We're opening up 4 new satellite offices within the next year or two. We have about 12,000 employees, and they are largely attorneys, engineers, scientists. So it's a very desirable workforce, a little younger than the average federal workforce, but by a little bit. We have about a $3 billion budget. And
your subcomponent of commerce.
Subcomponent of the Department of Commerce. And we have done some research, and the work that the agency generates in terms of IP intensive industries is really who we serve, intellectual property IP. That has a huge effect on the GDP. About a third of the GDP can be linked back to patents and trademarks and other intellectual property protection, which is huge. And that, of course, translates into jobs. Mm-hmm. And that I think we talked earlier about mission linkage to the mission. And so I think all of our colleagues feel a great sense of connection to our mission and the ultimate result that it is having on people in this country, mm-hmm. And around the world, frankly. Which gives you a great sense of accomplishment.
Well, and if you want to talk, Catherine, about being part of something, you know, that sector of the economy, intellectual property, I mean, it's been the driver for at least a decade. And it's what the young generation is extremely connected to, you know.
Absolutely. Well, and I think PTO has a really interesting mission because there's that connection to the economy and that mission focus. But then you also have that civil service mission and sort of the desire to be a part of something bigger than themselves. That's a very motivating factor. This the younger generation is very pro-social, if you will, in terms of their engagement with different causes for good, social responsibility, things like that. And so by having both that connection to being a member of this civil service as well as being able to drive the economy, I think that's really powerful.
Right, and look at the talent in his agency. You know, Fred's saying it's an agency of lawyers, scientists, and engineers. You're really trying to get sort of the top echelon of the educated American workforce.
We're actually, absolutely, and we're attracting them, and then we want to keep them. And I think the telework program is a key component of that, as is this whole idea of engagement. If you're engaged, at where you work, and to Catherine's point, we spend a lot of time at work. Mm-hmm. If you're engaged and having fun, as one of my former mentors used to say, you ought to have fun at work, which is a radical concept, I think. But you really should. And if that's the case, you're probably going to stay. A couple other points about the PTO that make us a little different, and it does impact our ability to really telework so well, and that is that we're production-oriented. So our work, we grant patents and register trademarks. That's the primary job of the agency. It was granted to the agency in the Constitution. So we've been around a long time.
That's a fun fact, isn't it?
It's
like
great.
We're constitutionally based. If you're inside the Beltway, that's just a fun thing to be able to say.
Well, Thomas Jefferson signed some of the first patents, so it's really, really interesting. But the work is very technical. It requires a lot of concentration, and it's very measurable. Basically, how fast can we produce these registrations and grantings, and how well we do it, and that is all very measurable. So, in terms of knowing how much productivity you're getting out of your workforce, we are very good at that, and I think that really does help.
You're an intellectual assembly line.
We really are. And so that really helps support a telework program, because the performance measurement is really key to me of being able to effectively have a telework program. So if you can have a good performance management measurement system, I think that's probably one of the basic things that you need to have. And we're fortunate that we're able to do that.
And you're saying, and if correct, of your 12,000 employees, you say on any given day, 50% are teleworking.
Yes.
That David, isn't that number, it's just astronomical across the government, isn't it? 50%.
Well, I think, obviously, PTO has been doing this for a while and has kind of figured it out. But I do think there's more opportunities for other agencies to kind of get on that bandwagon. And I believe we still have some of the traditional factors of resistance of, you know, can't see you, I don't know what you're doing, and so forth. So management resistance probably still tends to be the biggest barrier. But as we know, infrastructure costs mm-hmm. and looking for ways to save on building costs and technology, there's opportunities, I think, for other agencies to learn from Fred's experiences about how to do that right.
Yeah, to today's point, we added 3,000 people in the last 2 years. We're hiring a great number of people at the Patent and Trademark Office, and we added no new office space.
Which is, you know, remember the 80s and the 90s? It was, you know, it was a square footage formula. And it just, it outpaced the government's ability to buy them, build it, buy it, build it, and occupy it. And so, of course, they went to leasing, which is the next controversy on the horizon about spending all these billions of dollars leasing something you don't own. And now you sort of feel it across town, at least in D.C. You feel it sort of cycling backwards, that, you know, the government isn't that interested anymore in buying it and building it or leasing it. And, you know, PTO is a really great example of how you can your workforce excels, and you've really eliminated infrastructure. You haven't eliminated it; you've reduced it substantially, and that makes people happy too. You know, people don't like commuting, Fred. That's really what it comes down to, right? Inside the Beltway, they just don't like commuting.
They don't, and we actually, if anyone wants to go out to our website, we have a telework spot on our website, and we have an annual report that we put out, and it captures all of the environmental impact as well, huge environmental impact of keeping people off the road and things like that.
Yeah, and the younger generation, they want to be part of that.
Definitely. Well, and to return to the idea of this technology enabling not just these cost savings, but also the role of technology in engaging the workforce. Because like you said, these people are working from home. They're not necessarily seeing each other all the time. But technology is a component of connecting with the workforce. And that's very motivating to the younger generation. And quite frankly, to everyone. I mean, that's the nature of the work these days. And having, you know, people, regardless of generation, use their smartphones all the time. They want to look up a Yelp review on their restaurants and things like that. People have come to expect that kind of connection over technology. And by capital, that doesn't turn off when you come to work. And by capitalizing on that, I think, particularly in the engagement world, is really powerful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it's just a fascinating. It was sort of the perfect storm for PTO because of the nature of the work and the nature of their workforce to be able to pull off that engagement factor. But, you know, David, on a broader level, when you just sort of take it and you look at the, you know, 20,000-foot view of the federal workforce, why is this survey, the EVS survey, Best Places to Work, why is it a good tool for measuring engagement?
Yeah, well,
it wasn't always.
No, but I think it's been right for its time in the last 10 years. And when we look back and say, why do we do this? You know, it generates a lot of media attention from each of the Washington Post and many other you know, newspapers and digital magazines around town. I will tell you, in my experience, those who are at the top and are proud of it and want to keep that, those who are at the bottom, you know, often wonder how to move to the top. And so a lot of what we do is figuring out how to help those organizations where they are try and find ways to move up. But, you know, I know we're going to talk a little bit about the leadership impact. Mm-hmm. And just to make a little bit of a plug for a report that we produced with the Partnership for Public Service last December, there's some things that leaders can do. And I think Fred spoke to Dave Kapos. I don't think I can underestimate the importance of basically very top leadership and what they can do to help create an inspiring and motivated, you know, workplace and workforce. So you'll see some success factors or strategies for success in this report. It's things like developing shared values. It's connecting people through communications. It's investing in your employees. And that could mean training, but it could mean investing my time mm-hmm. and just spending time with someone mm-hmm. to get to know them. And how do I help you? And, you know, how do you help me? So while I don't think there's one magic formula, I think there's some nuggets out there that you can grab onto. People also ask me, what is that silver bullet? What is that, you know, that magic bullet? And I come back and say, well, Fred's may be different than yours. So even though there's some strategies out there, you really can't shirk your responsibility for taking these kind of information, embracing it, understanding it, and then figuring out your own way to really act upon
it. In the report, the Best Places to Work, the case study, there's a case study report. At the back of it, you have these strategies for success. And I remember, Fred, when I saw you last week at the FMA conference, that, you know, somebody either from the audience or on the panel wanted to talk about some quick fixes. And there was an initial discussion about whether or not you could have a quick fix. And as I recall, the panel sort of unanimously agreed that there was broad conceptual things agencies could do that would move their score some. Leadership engagement, communication, transparency, and these strategies for success, I think that sort of builds on it. But Fred, am I capturing that correctly from last week?
Yes, I think so. And I would also direct everybody back to the actual survey itself. The Employee Viewpoint Survey has about 130 questions, I think. And there is a wealth of information there, and they measure many, many dimensions of the workplace health, if you will. And that all comes together to create an engaging environment. We at the PTO, we're number one, and we're thrilled to be number one.
But now you got to stay number one.
Exactly. We have a challenge of staying number one. To be honest with you, our sights are set beyond that. And we go back to that survey. There's a lot of room for improvement, in a lot of areas, even at the number one place to work. And we're all focused on that. I think that's probably another key point. It's not a silver bullet, but the point of the PTO's success was engaging through the business unit heads, from Dave Kappos through the business unit heads, really engaging everybody in creating an engaging environment. And that's all of the leadership team, from the first line supervisor, mm-hmm. who are probably the most critical mm-hmm. component, all the way through and really to each and every colleague, mm-hmm. you know, whether you're in a leadership position or not.
And before we take our final commercial break, I do want to make that point that everybody on the panel said, look at your own data. There's a lot of information in your own data. Take the data at face value. Don't debate it. Remember, they said that. Don't debate it and argue with why these employees were wrong. They're saying it.
Right.
Listen to them and put into place something that responds, which I thought, isn't that the simplest? That's such a simple, great piece of advice. We do need to take our final commercial break. When we come back, we're going to be talking with Catherine Ryan about the study that she did on developing and engaging new leaders, the new generation. You're listening to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Today, my journey to help save people money on car insurance brought me to our nation's capital. I was taking a stroll around a mall when I met a very nice gentleman from Ohio who asked me a question. What kind of word is GEICO anyway? An excellent question, I replied. I told him that GEICO isn't a word, it's an acronym, and it stands for Government Employees Insurance Company. I explained how GEICO actually got its start 75 years ago to help federal employees save money on car insurance. Interesting, the man replied. But today, GEICO saves lots of people money on car insurance, including me. Have you ever thought about changing the name? I said. It's a thought. But Gecko sounds like GEICO. If we change the name, I might be out of a job. We strolled a bit more, stopped for some tea, and we both agreed. It's probably best to keep the name just like it is. GEICO.
To get a free rate quote, go to GEICO.com, then buy online or over the phone. If you're a federal employee or belong to an association like Big, Few, Young Government Leaders, and others, you may qualify for a special discount. Contact GEICO today to request your special federal savings.
Welcome back to Fed Talk. I'm Deborah Roth. I'm hosting the show today on federal employee workforce and the issues of engagement and leadership development. If you just joined us, you probably want to re-listen to the show when it's downloaded to the website, because we've had the opportunity to speak with some of the sort of foremost people in the area of human capital. We have Fred Steckler with us. He's the Chief Administrative Officer for the Patent and Trademark Office, which ranked number one in the 2013 Best Places to Work. And David Dye, he's with Deloitte's Federal Human Capital Practice. They were the sponsor of the Best Places to Work program with the Partnership for Public Service. But we've been around the edges today talking about leadership development, because when you look at all of the data that they've collected from the EVS, leadership is a very, you know, leadership engaging the workforce is integral to raising your score. And the baby boomer generation, we've been talking about it now for quite a while, is supposed to like leave en masse and retire. And there's a concern, Catherine, that there's nothing, you know, that the bench isn't filled behind them. And I read a report that you did, New Government Leaders, that's posted on Deloitte's website. Mm-hmm. And tell us about that. It's very interesting, the study of the millennial generation's mind.
Sure. Yeah, well, so the report is about looking at what the leader of tomorrow needs in their tool belt to be able to be effective. And I think it really sort of challenges us to think beyond the typical traditional competencies and models that are developed in leaders. And as you mentioned, leaders are extremely integral in this employee engagement topic. They're one of the primary drivers of the actual scores and the best places to work and things like that. And it's really important to engage leaders at all levels. So Fred was talking about
the first level.
Yeah.
That's
having
a leader.
Yeah, exactly. And one of the interesting things actually is that leadership development, the average age that people go into leadership development programs is 42. That might be a little bit too late, don't you think? So you have to think about, what are you doing with your younger members of the workforce to develop them into leaders of tomorrow?
Yeah. And when I read your report, I liked that they described, we'll appreciate it on this side of the table, the traditional leadership model is command and control, right? There's a lot of giggling around the table from the baby boomer generation, but it's true, you know. And maybe that was a result of two world wars, and you know, those generations entering the workforce, that's how you get the job done. But Catherine, you're saying that's not you and your colleague who authored this report. That model is dated.
Yeah, and I think the message here in terms of the new government leader, looking at the different ways of engaging not only your employees, but different problems and information and resources and things like that. I mean, the traditional silos that are created through the command and control type of models are really not helping us any. And I think by looking beyond some of those traditional buckets that people typically place responsibilities and roles and solutions really into, it's really motivating to the younger members of the workforce, because they want to make an impact. They want their ideas to be heard. They want to feel like they're making a difference with whatever they're doing.
Mm-hmm. And you, in your report, you come up with six new behaviors that the leader of sort of today, tomorrow, and in the federal government is going to have to have in their tool chest. Go through them with us.
Sure. Well, I think, you know, there's a lot of literature on the common characteristics of good leaders and things like that. And we sort of looked beyond those. What are those new things that you're really going to start to have to develop based on changing citizen expectations, changing employee expectations, and really the evolving complexity of the operating environment in the government?
Yeah.
And so we had six new behaviors we thought would be a good thing for folks to start focusing on. The first one is agile integration, and that really has a lot more to do, like I said, with solving problems across different, not depending on silos, solving problems with new resources, different ideas, and things like that. And those leaders who are able to do that really connect people, information, those sorts of things, and defy those siloed approaches. And the next is quiet transparency.
I like that it was quiet.
I know.
Because when you read the definition, she repeats the word quiet. It's like you have to be quiet when you're transparent. It's interesting.
Yeah, well, and I think that really speaks also to the younger members of the workforce who, you know, if you're going around waving a flag saying, I'm transparent, look at me, it's sort of a turnoff. And so I think folks who are able to be transparent in a more subdued way, but still engage the the feeling that, okay, you know, whatever I'm doing and the things that I am contributing are really important. So one of those features of Quiet Transparency is inviting others to help you with their ideas and really making people feel like their ideas matter, mm-hmm. and they can make a contribution beyond just being the giver of answers as a leader.
Mm-hmm. Or being directed to get something done that pushes the information up, where somebody else
definitely
is in charge of making, you know, coming up with the final idea. Yeah. I mean, that's the bureaucratic model right now,
sure.
which, you know, the government has been criticized over and over again.
Yeah.
And it's the tension between the current bureaucracy, the culture of the bureaucracy, and the new generation. They want to be able to walk into the agency head's office with their brilliant idea of the day and be able to share it. And, like, they just don't understand why their ideas, not that they don't matter, but why they don't get a seat at the table.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think one of the key components of engaging the younger workforce isn't necessarily to, you know, have everyone invited into every meeting and every room, but setting up opportunities or systems that allow those ideas to be heard. And so leaders who are able to create that kind of openness and transparency, inviting those kinds of ideas and a place for those ideas to go where they're actually heard. I think sometimes folks get a little caught up in sort of, oh, well, we'll go to this, you know, idea platform or things like that. But when things don't happen because of those ideas, it's really tough.
And last week, Fred, when you and I were at the conference, one of your colleagues on the panel from transportation, remember, he had the idea board. It was an electronic board, Department of Transportation, huge. And he said that exact same thing. It wasn't just enough that the idea could get posted. We had to do something with it, and we had to report back. And that's when he noticed the score started to move. It wasn't just like an idea box.
Right. I think if nothing happens, you're actually in a worse place than before you put the box up.
Yeah. Really. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And that was the old days. Remember the old days? Remember the old days where there was a suggestion box in the kitchen? Okay. And, you know, and you just, you wouldn't even write your answer, you know, your suggestion, because they could tell your handwriting, right? But we have just a few more minutes, Catherine.
Sure.
March us through a couple more of the behaviors.
Sure. So the next one is around digital Aikido, which I really like that name. It's sort of the underlying concept is that you don't have to sort of force your way into digital conversations. You can kind of manage the conversation that's happening about either your agency mission or the new ideas or things like that. I think some of that digital atmosphere often gets lost, particularly when we're talking about folks who might not necessarily be engaging in those channels or medium on a day-to-day basis in mm-hmm. the federal workforce. I think that's going to become an even more important component of engaging, particularly the younger workforce.
Mm-hmm. And particularly if you follow the model at PTO and the mandate that comes out of you know, legislation and executive orders to really focus on telework, that digitalness
yeah.
of the workforce is critical.
Definitely. Anytime, anywhere, and on any device is something that has really been pushed out in the digital White House referendum, and I think that applies to the workforce as well.
So we have less than a minute left. So instead of marching through the rest of the behaviors, tell our listeners, Catherine, where they can
sure.
find your report.
Sure. You can find it on dupress.com.
DU is?
DU is the Deloitte University Press. So you can go there, and it's called The New Government Leader, Mobilizing Agile Public Leadership in Disruptive Times.
Right. And it comes out of the Deloitte Deloitte's GovLab, right?
Yes.
Which I thought was really a fun thing to read about. But in our last few seconds, I want to thank our guest, Fred Steckler, from the Patent and Trademark Office.
Thank you.
And I want to wish you the best in the 2014 survey results, right? Because David Dive from Deloitte, he's going to be counting, right?
I'm going to help Fred stay at number one.
Thank you. That's great. Thank you.
So let's do this again in 2014. Thank you all for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.